Hi, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another issue of Comic Chronicle. I am Society's Mutant / Metahuman, your host, Dakota Morgan, coming to you from Phoenix, Arizona. And today I have a very special guest, a man who's, if you look at his record, has been a big part of our lives in many different things. Go ahead and introduce yourself, man.
Hey, I'm Kip Vandenhoevel. What's up? Thanks for having me on, Dakota.
No problem, man. No problem. So I gotta say, I just knew you from Batman v Superman, and then all of a sudden, I look at your record a little bit here to kind of like look, see what you've done, and oh my God, it's just fantastic. Like,
I've been lucky to be able to be a part of a lot of really freaking cool things.
Yeah.
I'm a nerd. I'm kind of like the Zelig of the film business. I pop up in cool stuff, and I'm not there long, but I get to get in there and be a part of it, and that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. I mean, I just can't believe.
What stuff is nerding you out? Because there's like a couple things that are like, oh yeah, that was fun, or that was like, oh, I'm passionate about being a part of that thing.
Oh my God! I mean, you name it, it is. I mean, the big thing is BioShock for me, really,
yeah.
And Batman v Superman, because like, it added humanity to kind of the movie a little bit too, like someone you can relate to as your role in there.
Yeah.
And the stuff I nerd about, like, it's mostly, as you can tell, like, comic stuff. Like,
sure.
Comics and movies. I mean, obviously, because I got a show on movies, too, basically. So, like, it's just, oh, my God. It's an honor, to be honest with you, to have you on the show.
Dude, I mean, listen, I came up in Grand Rapids, Michigan,
mm-hmm.
as a fan of, you know, Batman and Star Wars and, you know, really interesting, edgy video games. And, I lost sleep getting excited for Tim Burton's Batman movie to come out. And I'm a huge Michael Keaton fan. Like, all that stuff really informed my desire to be in this thing. And, you know, when you go to IMAX and they have the thing that comes up that says, you know, watch a movie or be part of one. I wanted to figure out how to be part of one.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, I joined the Screen Actors Guild in Detroit.
Oh, wow.
Billy Crystal came to town to make his movie 61. And we had a scene in the film that ended up getting cut, but I made like two shots and it was, you know, my first movie, and I got to meet Billy Crystal and be directed by him, and then you know, from that, I just took baby steps out, you know, until we got out west. And you know, sometimes you get little small things here and there, and then you get a big win like BioShock Infinite. And you know, I mean, that was such a huge deal. I was such a tremendous fan of the first couple games and of Ken Levine's storytelling, and you know, it was really just an honor to be a part of it. I still have, like, in my office here, I have the backstage pass from when they launched the game down at Universal City.
Oh, wow. I didn't even know.
Went down there,
wow.
And, like, did a signing. It was, like, absurd. But people, you know, lay out for the game release at midnight. We had a bunch of BioShock Infinite posters, and Wayne Brady came as a fan with a copy of his Game Informer magazine with the BioShock Infinite cover on it.
Uh-huh.
And we talked to him, and Heather Gordon, who did all the performance capture for Elizabeth, and Courtney Draper, who was Elizabeth's voice, and then, God, like, Grant Chang, and, like, you know, some of the guys who were animators on it, and Drew Holmes, who wrote it, who's also gone on to write Far Cry 5, I think.
Oh,
so,
shit.
Like, I mean, just being in the mix, you come out here and you realize, no, this is where it's made. And if you want to do it, you have to be here. So go out there and you hustle and you keep auditioning, and eventually you start to book stuff.
Yeah, it takes slow steps. I agree with you 100% on that. And my teacher, I go to voice acting school here in Phoenix, and she tells us that every single class, baby steps, work on stuff, because people come in and they're like, I want to be next part of the movie or something like that. She's like, baby steps, don't be stupid. You gotta work on it. And that's her thing is like, don't be stupid.
I'll give you that. I would also say, like, challenge as a nerd is that everything has tremendous weight. Everything is so important. I'm such a fan that my fear is that I'll let my fandom get in the way of playing and get in the way of being doing it well. I want to be a part of the thing. And if I'm too, if I nerd out too much about it, it'll prohibit me from being able to be present and really be the character. Because the character you're playing doesn't know that he's in a Batman thing.
No.
You know?
No.
It's my wife and I talk about it all the time. When you go into a big audition, a lot of times you have a lot of adrenaline and excitement. You're like, oh boy, this is surreal. This is huge. This is everything I prepared for. And you're whipping yourself up into a frenzy. And that's not a good space to be when you're doing an audition or when you're doing a job or whatever. So it literally is about, what's the phrase she uses? Adrenaline mitigation.
Ooh.
Which is how to take your adrenaline and your energy and your freaking out and all that other stuff and turn that into proactive energy. Channel that into an energy that's going to help you calm and focus and do the job. So when you're, you know, standing, like I did a movie with Al Pacino, and like being on set with Al Pacino, just the two of us in a scene, and before the camera rolls, I'm like, it's Al Pacino, and I'm running my lines in my head and all this other stuff. But then when the camera's rolling, I don't know that it's Al Pacino.
Yeah.
All I know is he's a guy I work for, and he's playing a character, and I'm playing a character, and all I want to do is just be considered a trusted colleague, not a fanboy who snuck onto the set. So it's a difficult balance to strike and find in yourself of how do I put those feelings to bed, and as you say, like not be stupid, or like I'll turn that into like I just want to be cool. I want to be able to go up to Zack Snyder and ask him, like, is this the biggest picture you've worked on?
Oh, God, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, you want to.
That dude, I'm such a huge fan of Zack Snyder. I was since his Dawn of the Dead.
So
to
be able
to work with him was like, dude, seriously, a dream come true.
Yeah, I've followed his movies since I've been a kid, since I've been little. And, you know, in condolences to him, too, with his recent tragedy, too. I mean, all our hearts go out to him.
Yeah, I can't fathom that.
No.
I mean, to go through, I'm glad he stepped down from the movie to address his family concerns and to spend time with his family because, you know, I mean, boy, both he and Deborah because, you know, they're producing partners.
He's
directing, she's producing. I mean, they were on set every day, you know, we shot Batman, and they had just, you know, they had, like, recently had a kid, and they have 7 children.
Oh, shoot, I didn't even know that. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Huge family.
Yeah, and you know what it shows too is that the guy's actually a family man, and, you know, that's respectable too, so much.
I mean, the thing is, dude, like, that's one of the most shocking things I learned when I got out here. Everybody's got their families and their, you know, the most important thing is like you have to have a life.
Yeah.
You know, this is the being outside of it for so long built it up in my head. And it is still a big deal to be a part of it. But then after a while, you do settle into it and go, yeah, okay. I got to go to Universal today and go voice match someone, and I'll drive onto the lot and I'll do my job and I'm done in 15 minutes and I don't even go to the gift store anymore. I just split. You know, it's amazing and it's thrilling, but it also is like, it's work.
Yeah.
So it's finding the
balance sort of thing.
Yeah,
right. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, fine, and that's a good thing to do, too. I mean, because you'll get lost in your work, you'll get lost in it, and then once you get done with it or something happens and you try to go back to your outer life, then it's like you got nothing, and you're like, oh, shit.
Yeah, life doesn't wait for you.
No, oh, like, no.
I mean, I got my daughter's 10, and I'm so grateful that I've got the career I've got that I can be around. Yeah, I have a small studio in my house. I record.
Ooh.
I mean, small studio. I'm coming to. I'm literally. It's literally. Let me see how deep it is. It's about 2.5 feet deep by 4 feet wide, where my microphone, computer, mixing board, ISDN, printer, all that stuff is. Like, it's a tiny, tiny space, and I've I locked myself into this tiny little space, and I was doing like audiobooks a couple years ago in this space.
Oh, wow.
It was great. I mean, I was working from home, but that also means I was going into my closet, shutting the door, and locking myself in for hours at a time. I might as well have been going to the office on Saturdays.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, I'm in the house, but I'm not.
Yeah, so you're there, like, where's Dad? Oh, he's in the hole. Oh, okay.
Yeah. That's exactly it. So I ultimately got rid of my desktop computer and got a laptop, so at the very least, I'll record stuff in my studio and then take it out and edit in, like, the living room. Yeah. It might be a little annoying to my wife and kid. Or not. They're just accustomed to it, and I can participate in life a little bit more and not stare at the wall.
Yeah, and it's a good thing, too. I mean, it's always good to spend time with the family. I'm a family man myself, and it's like, yeah, I run a network. Yeah, I run the two shows. But you also got to spend time with the family. You can't forget, because technically they made you where you – they may not have, like, gave you a contract or anything like that, but they kind of made you who you are and where you are today, you know?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, it's –
And they're why you do what you do.
Exactly.
I mean, after a while, when you there's a fantastic artist named Bobby Chiu, Chiu, I think either Chiu or Chi or Ue, Ui.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's Iu. Anyway, Bobby has a stream like a every Monday he does like a pep talk for artists, and then he does live streaming of he's a tremendous character artist. He was like concept designer for Alice in Wonderland, Tim Burton, Alice in Wonderland. He does a ton of stuff.
Jesus, that's already a big knock out of the park right there.
I mean he's really incredible, but he also has a thing called Schoolism.
Ooh.
And Schoolism is he's got a bunch of other incredibly gifted artists to make art education affordable online, and for like $15 a month you can take a class studying from these people, and they're all online and they're brilliant. I mean, it's like, you know, interactive training, and you know, his take on the whole thing is, you know, the real value of what we do is not just the art, but the legacy of it and the passing on of the knowledge and the skill set.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a way to give back, in particular to people who couldn't afford an expensive art school or who want to specialize in something, you know. And but man, if you check out for your listeners, if anyone is a budding artist or just interested, man, go to Schoolism. I think it's schoolism.edu or schoolism.com, something like that.
Yeah.
Probably look online and tell you. But he did a whole thing. One of his talks was about what do you do. Yeah, schoolism.com.
Oh, okay.
What do you do once you've achieved your goals? What do you do once you've done everything you've wanted to accomplish? Then what? And you need to set new goals. Like if you're, you know, like for me, I was in Toledo, Ohio, and I was like, I just want to be a working professional voice actor. Okay. Well, in a very short amount of time, in Detroit, I became a working professional voice actor. And then I had to start thinking, all right, well, what's next? What else do I want to do? Well, I want to find a way to be in cartoons. And it took a while, but I've booked cartoon work. So it's like after you get that experience, you have to kind of keep redefining what your next goal is. Otherwise, you can get stagnant or you can start losing. I was talking to a friend yesterday who's just said, you know, he was working performance capture in a huge video game. And he's like, I just don't feel artistically satisfied. I'm like, how can you not feel artistically satisfied? You're working on this amazing project, but the grass is always greener, and you've got to be looking for different ways that you find inspiration in all places.
Yeah.
And for me, it's doing my podcast. For me, it's sharing old school films with my daughter and my wife. I mean, I find a tremendous amount of career satisfaction in my work, but I also find great satisfaction in a terrific edgy audition that might not book me work, but did I get better? You know what I mean? And personal improvement.
Yeah, and you got to think too. You did that audition, and so like that's the big thing too. And especially the listeners, if you at least like think about it that way. Like if you don't do it, if you don't at least get what you're going for, if you at least got to the halfway point, that's still an accomplishment. Because there's people who never
get. And all you want to do is be in the mix. That's right. You just want to be auditioning for stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because before, I wasn't. You know?
Yeah,
that's it. There's still auditions that are going on that I can't participate in for whatever reason, that an agent didn't give me that audition, or the casting director didn't want to see me, or I'm in a different city. You know? So it's about getting into the mix and figuring out how to do that. And then making the most of that opportunity.
It's true. It's true. And another example is, I'm a small town kid. I grew up in Northern Illinois, and where it's cornfields, and then you go up north a little bit, like 40 miles or Chicago. But and now I'm here in Phoenix, and I'm doing all this crazy stuff. And if you look at it, and people are like, you're a god. And I'm like, no, it's just, you got to keep pushing forward. And it's like, you never know where you will end up. You just got to keep trying for your goals. And my goal was to, like, start a show sort of thing. I've got to talk to amazing people, get to talk to you, you know. And then I got another show, and now I got a network. Now I'm going to voice acting school. And the utmost goal is to at least be in a movie or television show, extra voice actor or whatever, or a game. I mean, that's the utmost goal. And once I reach that goal, it's keep moving forward. And you just...
Yeah, man.
It's work, and that's where I think it turns off for a lot of people these days. It's a lot of work to try to do it all.
I would hope that people don't get turned off by the work aspect of it. I think the most important skill to have with all of it is patience.
Yes,
because you cannot understate the amount of patience it takes to do this. I mean, I was in Cleveland in 2004 after the Second City closed. I had already done, I was already SAG-AFTRA. I'd done a couple pictures. I had already done Midnight Club 3 dub edition. So I'd worked for Rockstar Games. I thought I thought I was on my way. And I was standing there going, man, I feel like a racehorse whose gate won't open. And, you know, and it was like, well, what are you prepared to do? You know, what are you going to do about that feeling? What are you creating? What steps are you taking to make yourself better when there were no opportunities?
Yeah.
So I was driving to Detroit three times a week to audition. I was driving to Pittsburgh to audition. I did theater. I did promotions work, working at bars, handing out shots, dressing like a coffee cup to wave at traffic. You know, just doing anything I could to put food on the table so that I didn't have to go back to corporate. And then I went back to corporate for a while, but I did corporate how I did it. You know, I mean, I was writing sketch comedy. I was doing live shows. I was doing training for stuff. But all the time, I still had that goal of getting out to Los Angeles and doing this work. And it's kind of like you can't define your idea of what you need to do to put food on the table as failure. You know, people have a real all or nothing mentality about what they're, you know, I'm not doing anything, or man, I can't believe it. I'm like, I'm 42 and what have I done with my life? Or I'm 37. I'm supposed to be, you know, wasn't John Belushi dead by 33? I'm supposed to have already done Silence. Like, no, dude, you're on the path that you're on.
Yeah.
And it's going to take the amount of time it takes. And the question that you need to ask yourself every morning is, do I have the patience to make it through today still believing I can do it?
Exactly.
That's the discipline. It's the hardest part of it. And then you know, I had Erin Cahill, a friend of mine on my show, and she was like, you know, every day I try to do three things for work.
Mm-hmm.
If that's an email, if that's auditions, if that's some social media, if that's a book I need to read, if that's a monologue I need to memorize. If anybody who's listening is interested in doing this work and they're not, like, reading acting books, acting training, you don't have to be a stage actor to do voiceover, but you need to have good acting skill.
Yeah.
Especially if you want to do this stuff. It's not just about crazy voices. It's about great character work.
Mm-hmm.
And that all that information lives in, you know, your local markets where there's, you know, acting classes online, books. There's so many different places you can get that training. And if you want to do animation and video games, you need to. I don't know anybody who's in those who's in those disciplines, including, you know, Cam Bowen and David Soboloff, Bob Bergen, and everybody, Fred Tasher, all these people I know who are tremendous actors first. That's so important that you get good acting training along with the animation and video game training.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. You know, that just continually bombards me, that truth of how important it is to have a good solid acting background. Yeah. And if you don't have that, like, go get it. There's no reason you can't participate in this world, but you need to have the language and the lexicon and the understanding of where that lives in you to be able to make strong emotional choices and stuff. Improv too, you know?
Yeah. Oh, heavy improv. Improv's like the key, is the golden key to acting a little bit too. That's what my old theater teacher and director used to tell us too. He's like, yeah. Improv can lead you to fun places in life. It really can. No matter what you do. And it's like, he's not wrong. I mean,
no, it's absolutely true. I'm very grateful for my improv training and experience. And I'm teaching an improv class, literally a class called Improv for Voiceover, Improvisation for Voiceover. So it's more about using tools of improvisation to work with script and to play by yourself, because so much improv is about group work.
Yeah.
Well, we're writing a scene together. We're improvising and staying in the moments together. But, like, there's this great book by Viola Spolin called Improvisation for the Lone Actor. And it's just a bunch of exercises that you can do by yourself in preparation for script.
Okay.
And then you bring these, and it's about sensory awareness, and it's about connection, and about being interesting, and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a great segment in there about barriers to successful acting work. It's got everything to do with attitude. I mean, it's a fantastic book. It's like $10. It fits in your back pocket.
Oh wow!
And it's a really, really great guide.
Yeah.
Her big book, Improvisation for the Theater, is it's the textbook that we use at Second City. But I really like Improvisation for the Lone Actor as well. It's the same exercises. It's just been modified for how can you do it and how can you side coach yourself? Mm-hmm. How can you direct yourself while you're reading?
Yeah.
And it's great stuff.
I might actually pick up that book, to be totally honest with you. I'm probably going to go to Barnes & Noble after this and say, hey, guys, I got a special request here. Wow.
Yeah,
This has turned into the support podcast, really, for people in dreams. It really has. Like, I meant to talk to you about roles and that, like, and now we're, like, giving some, like, you and me, we're, like, giving support and, like, advice and everything like that, and wow.
At the end of the day, like, roles are just roles.
It's true.
I mean, I've done some of the work that I'm most proud of, and the work that I've done, I narrated a book called Crooked. By Austin Goldman.
Yeah, I heard of that book, actually.
I narrated the entire book as Richard Nixon. I'm so proud of my work in that book.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't get any residuals from that. I'm not cast off of that thing. And it's not necessarily a high-profile, you know, thing.
No.
But, like, I'm really proud of what I did in it. I'm really proud to be a part of Batman vs. Superman. I love the movie. I love Zack Snyder. I love being part of Gotham City.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's got to be kick-ass.
But at the end of the day, like, as an actor, looking at, like, I love the work I did in The Walking Dead as Walter.
Yes.
Video game, and as Victor Zsasz in Batman Arkham City, there's just,
Telltale game,
series.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, and Comstock, I mean, it was some really difficult emotional work, vocally challenging work, emotional, you know?
Yeah, that's a role, too, that I was curious about, because I'm, like, listening back to it, I'm like, I can kind of hear you, but there's kind of a little bit I can hear you originally, and then there's kind of not. And it was just so surprising to me, it, like, took me off guard. I'm like, holy shit.
The way that job went down, I'm fairly certain, and you're going to have to talk to either Ken or Troy about this. I don't know that either one will confirm or deny it, but I believe that they had, this is a major spoiler for anyone who hasn't played BioShock.
Oh, it's fine. Yeah, it's many years.
I think they had Troy record all of Comstock's dialogue originally.
Really?
Yeah. And there's not a, there's not an epic amount of Comstock dialogue. Your the presence is very heavy throughout the game.
But, yes.
I mean, my first six sessions, we were working on one scene, and it's the birdbath scene. And it had already been animated. It's a cinematic that you get to walk through, and they weren't going to change the animation to match my performance. Mm-hmm. So they had recorded Troy, and he had delivered that whole sort of speech where he's washing Elizabeth's hands and stuff, all the way through to the end of it. And they had done an animation to it, and they were not going to change it, including the lip sync. So I had to basically ADR that. And that was the first piece we did. And it's a complex-ass piece.
Yeah.
Like, I'm talking to Elizabeth, and then I'm taunting Booker, and then I'm screaming. And like, and we were really trying to figure out who Comstock was.
Mm-hmm.
So I was at Technicolor in Burbank with headphones on, and then with an earwig in so I could hear Ken through on Skype. And then there's a video monitor that had the animation, and then they had lavalier microphones onto a baseball cap.
Oh, geez.
So they could get in stereo if I moved my head, plus a 416 in front of me. And then, like, it was a really complicated recording situation. And we did it, but I always felt like Ken wasn't happy.
Mm-hmm.
And then I didn't hear anything. And we would do that, like, every week for, like, 6 weeks. And then I heard nothing for about 3 weeks, and I was like, well, I guess that's that.
Yeah,
I know the games, and I assume there's more than just what we recorded.
Mm-hmm.
And then my agent called, and she was like, so Irrational wants you on a plane tonight to be in Boston tomorrow. I was working at Disneyland, so I got done with my shift. I got on a red eye. I flew to Boston. The car picked me up from the hotel, and I went into Irrational, and we recorded everything for the character in 4 hours.
Holy shit.
I got back on a plane, and I was back in L.A.
Wow.
And it was, but I think Ken's feeling was, I want to work directly with you in the room. I think we will have more success if we're together.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have all these pieces of equipment and time frames standing on our heads. And when I walked into the whisper room at Irrational, I mean, it was dizzying, and I was freaking exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
And I just said, you know, our last session, you said something that really resonated with me. You said that Comstock was like Harrison Ford in Mosquito Coast.
Oh, God.
I was like, yeah. I said, they gave me an idea, and I want to try something for you. And he like, jumped up and down a little bit and clapped his hands. He was like, this is my favorite part of the process, is when we actually collaborate. And I'm not just telling you what I want, but you're giving me feedback of what you think this character should be. Let's try it. And we did that scene, the birdbath scene. We did it a couple times, but the direction that we got in that session, and you can hear it. There's a real, like, I really wanted to bring in how much he loves Elizabeth.
Yeah.
I mean, enough that he would travel through time to steal her from himself. I mean, he's a twisted, broken person, but...
Very twisted.
But I really had to find love in his heart. And then let that inform all the audio logs.
Mm-hmm.
Because he knew this day was coming, that Booker was going to come.
Yeah, he knew. Yeah, it was kind of, he knew all along. He kind of knew what was happening during the entire thing, too. I mean,
absolutely.
He was, and that's, it just, I'll be honest about Bioshock Infinite, it's my second favorite game of all time. I can't beat Halo 3, I can't. It just, that one is my childhood. But, yeah.
Yeah, I think as narrative, I've not found its equal. I agree.
Yeah, it's... it's so good of a game, I can't put it in the words. And your performance too is just fantastic.
Thank you.
And it's wow. I got a couple questions about
Sure. Behind
the scenes on Batman v Superman.
Okay.
Did you get to drive the GCPD car?
No.
Oh damn.
Which bums me out.
Wow.
But I did walk down there to see it. We had to wait until the Tigers were done playing.
Mm-hmm.
So we were right down the street from Tiger Stadium in Detroit. And they had the crane set up for that shot. And Larry Fong is up there in the crane. There were people snapping pictures. And it's this dilapidated house downtown Detroit. And people were taking pictures and posting online saying that they thought it was Wayne Manor, which was hilarious. but they probably did 15 passes of that shot with the Gotham City cop car, like, driving past and peeling out. And Mason, my partner who played detective, or who played Officer Rucka, he was in the car with the stunt driver every time.
Oh, the lucky bastard.
Yeah, right?
Oh, wow. Yeah, I just was curious. I'm like, oh, did they let him drive it? Because that would be like a bucket list item crossed off. Like, what'd you do today? I was a Gotham cop, and I got to drive one kick-ass looking GCPD car.
Dude, I got to spend so much time in that car. It was beautiful. Dodge Charger. It was so comfortable.
Yeah.
And sitting in there and getting out of it and, you know, watching the football game and the extended cut.
Yeah, I was bummed about that, too. When I saw the extended cut, I'm like thinking, like, that's actually a really cool scene. Like, I was signed up to be part of that football game, too. I was going to drive out to L.A., but problem was I was 17 at the time, and you had to be 18. And I gave the biggest motherfucker so loud when I thought, because I got the email saying I can't be part of it, and they were bummed about it. Like, damn it. Damn it. Like, it was, oh. And that was also, I had the same thing happen. It was, I think, a year later, it was a bad incident that happened in the family. And, well, this girlfriend in Vegas and that. And so I wasn't looking at my phone emails or anything like that. And so I get back, and I had this invitation to be part of Colin Skull Island. And I'm like, God damn it. I send it in. Yeah. I was supposed to be one of the soldiers in there that was going to get killed by Connor or a monster. But they wanted kids who had pilots. And I worked at the Air Force, and I was a pilot. And so I did all this stuff. And so they're like, you're perfect. But the problem is you send in your application too late. It's like, damn it. That was so, I was the, oh, it was a regret of my life. I mean, I'm looking.
Oh, dude. You gotta stay on top of that stuff, man.
I know. That's
called opportunity knocks.
It is. I have the reminder of, like, keep trying, and who knows what the hell's going to happen.
Because
I got the poster for Colin Skull Island with him and the silhouette and the soldiers in the water and that, too. I got that as a reminder, but man, like, I just wish I would have checked the email, because I mean, I was dumped in Vegas and left there for like 3 days with her family, and I'm like, I wasn't paying attention to anything, and being like 18 at the time, I'm like, oh no, I'm never gonna find love, and it was one of those.
Learn from that.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Never let yourself disconnect from. If you want to do this stuff, you've got to stay on call. You've got to keep your phone on. You've got to keep it charged. I can't tell you. I drive around Los Angeles with my mic with me everywhere I go.
Oh, shit.
Because I get way too much last-minute stuff.
Uh-huh.
And I'm reliant on last-minute stuff. I've done at least five things for Jimmy Kimmel Live
that
I was able to do because I had my microphone in the car. I could record it, turn on hotspot in my car, on my phone, email, and get it there while I was driving. Like, that is, like, what's given... That's the key to my golden handcuffs.
Yeah. Wow,
and
that's...
If you want to do this business, you've got to be first to Carson, because there's 50,000 other people who want the job that is coming to you.
Exactly.
So what are you doing to make sure that they don't get it? That when it comes to you, that you're the next Pez in the dispenser, that you can say yes.
Yep.
That's the toughest part of this, is, like, I don't have a straight job. I don't have a regular job. Sometimes it's tight. Sometimes things are slow.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to be able to pick up the phone when my talent agent calls and says, hey, can you be at Kalmanson tomorrow morning at 11:30? I can go, yep. And not worry about having to find coverage.
Yeah.
Having to give up a shift someplace. That's why you're paid what you're paid.
Mm-hmm. It's exactly it, and I will regret that probably for that thing with Colin Skull Island. I will regret that one, but it's still pretty cool to see the movie and be like, I was almost in this. And I tell my friends that back in Illinois, and they're like, yeah, bullshit.
Like, no, do you want the bad? You want the bad truth of how much you missed out on?
I don't know. I mean, I kind of want to know. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah,
I have a couple friends who worked on that movie who were there for months.
Oh, damn.
Months in Hawaii, staying in a hotel, working every day.
Yeah.
And then your residuals are not based on a flat rate. They're based on how much you worked.
Oh, wow.
So, like, residuals, you know, if you do one, like I did one day on Star Trek Into Darkness, doing ADR, 2 days, I'm sorry, two days on Star Trek Into Darkness and one day on G.I. Joe Retaliation.
Oh, shit.
I get twice as much from Star Trek than I did for G.I. Joe Retaliation, just simply because of how many days I worked on it,
mm-hmm.
in terms of residuals. So, like, you know, that's why a recurring character is a bigger deal. Like, the way it works with on-camera stuff anyway is, so, like, a co-star role, this is like television, right? So,
yeah.
Like, Parks and Recreation.
Oh, good one.
When I was on Parks and Rec, I was brought in for a co-star for like one line, work one day. And then you get a flat rate of like $900 before your agent takes their cut or your managers. You end up taking home about $600 out of that.
Yeah.
So then if it's more than one day, that's great. But if the character comes back in another episode, then it's considered recurring. If the character's been brought back and now you got another episode, and you might get 2 or 3 days on that particular episode, but you get residuals based on how many episodes you're in.
Yeah.
Anyway, but that's bottom, that's entry level with lines, like 5 and under. The next step up from that is guest star. Guest star, you're paid considerably more money, and you're there like for the whole week. But you may only be there for, you know, one of the plot lines for the episode, but you do well. Mm-hmm. Like, it might be a couple grand. Then there's series regular. Series regular means you're working every week. On Richie Rich, that's what I was. It was a series regular on Richie Rich for Netflix.
Oh, shit.
That was, you know, that's consistent money, consistent time, and, like, people buy houses with series regular money. So, like, at least once it goes into syndication. If you're a series regular for a show that runs, like, 10 episodes, it's like you might net $100,000... If scale right around there for 22 episodes. Mm-hmm. I didn't get anywhere near that for Richie, but we were doing a new media contract, so it was different. Anyway, that's all nuts and bolts, but I think it's important that if you want to do this stuff, that you know the nuts and bolts. So you're not willing to go, oh yeah, I'll do it for $100. Are you kidding? $100 a day? Are you kidding? That's amazing. You can get $100 a day, you know, as an extra.
Yeah.
You know, it's about being on set as an extra. It's awesome, but it's like, yeah, I was there. And it's a great place to get some set experience. But you start to go, how come I'm in this line? I'd like to be in those trailers. Just one step at a time, you know? You just keep on. The more educated you are about all that stuff, the better off you're going to be.
Yeah.
Sorry, on a huge tangent.
No, you're fine, dude. And you're speaking the truth. I mean, and I will agree to that 100% because since then I'm paying attention to emails 24/7. And this was like years ago. So it's like, and you're telling the truth, and it's honestly the best advice you could give for anyone who wants to get in kind of the business of this. It's the best advice. Not really that many people say it, but because they think like, well, you know, if they don't pay attention, it's their loss. But I mean, if you give the advice, it's honestly, it's something everyone should pay attention to. If not, then you're idiotic.
Like, it's on you. People can't. I just don't think this should be a mystery.
No.
And I think there's too many sources of information and too many, you know, and I got nothing to gain by sharing this stuff other than the legacy of people continuing to do the work.
Exactly. And you never know. You never know who you could tell good information to and what they can become later. Like, I helped someone out through rough times in the past, and next thing I know, they're a lieutenant in the Air Force, and now they're looking, they're going and doing all this amazing stuff, and they're at NORAD, anything like that, and they're like, I had helpful advice from you, and I'm like, damn.
It means something. Yeah. And it's more satisfying, you know? I mean, if something good happens to me, that's amazing, and it provides comfort for my family and all that other kind of stuff, but if I can help other folks out, I just feel like that's our job, you know, I don't know where I'm going with that, but
no, you're fine, man. And it's a good thing to kind of help people out too. The more you do, the more good you put in, the more and I guess it kind of sounds like I'm being selfish, but good can come back to you, but then also you put good in the world, and today we need a lot of it. I have a question. You said in Bioshock Infinite, though, man, that kind of changed the subject a little bit.
Sure.
You got some collectible stuff to keep. Did you get to keep anything from Bioshock? Like, did they give you anything cool? Because I know they got like the, I can't remember the name of the bottles that you get powers from. They have those out now.
Oh no, I didn't get any cool merch. I got two things from Bioshock. I was given a copy of the game, and that's kind of par for the course. I have a backstage pass up here, but that's from Universal. That had less to do with that. But the official merchandise company who handles stuff for Bioshock Infinite, I ran into them at oh, was it Anime Con? Ooh, something wow. like that. Some con.
Yeah.
Like last year in Pasadena.
Oh, wow.
And I was geeking over some of the stuff they had. I was like, oh, my God, they had a BioShock scarf. And it's, yeah. Man, I have it here. Where is it? Ah, it's hanging up somewhere here in my closet.
Yeah.
But it's this long, thick, gray scarf, and it's reversible, and it has a lighthouse on one side, and
oh, my God.
It's beautiful. And they were like, here. I told them I was in BioShock Infinite, and they were like, take it. I was like, that can't just take this from you. They're like, no. You don't understand how much we appreciate your work in that game. This is a gift. That was the other thing. I got a still, you know, when you go to these cons, they have artists who do like 11 by 17s.
Yes. Yeah.
This artist, I got to give him a shout out. The artist's name was Mark Dos Santos. And his website is daydreamsandgigglesstudios.com. Daydreamsandgigglesstudios.com. And he gave me an 11 by 17 print, this gorgeous full-color print of Elizabeth holding a book with a snow globe of Paris and then a bird cage with Songbird inside of it.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And if you go to daydreamsandgigglesstudios.com, you'll see Mark's work. And I met him at either Comic-Con, it had to be Comic-Con San Diego, or maybe Kamikaze last year, I forget.
Yeah.
One of those two. But I saw this banner of that artwork, and I was like, that's gorgeous. I was like, I actually got to play Comstock in the game. And he completely freaked out. And then he gave me that print.
Oh.
And I mean, the generosity of people with their art always floors me and inspires me to be generous with my both my time and with my encouragement too. So that's hanging up here in my room as well. So that in terms of swag, that'd be the only stuff I got from participating in BioShock. But yeah.
Okay, that's already pretty cool, and that's the nice part too. Is you see, is fans are always willing. They're giving gifts. Some of them are weird. That I've seen, that I've talked to people, and they're like, I got, like, this weird, someone gave me a bra or something like that one time. I'm like, oh, what?
Yeah, you never know what you're going to get. But some people, you know, people are overwhelmed by it, and it means, you know, it's connected to something. It's connected to their passion or connected to, I know for me as a fan of stuff, like, it's connected to what this person means to me and their, and it's my, I feel like as someone who's participating in that media and contributing to that story, that I owe a completion of the dialogue, you know?
Yeah.
Art is not a monologue. It's a dialogue. It's a dialogue between the performer and the fan or the audience. And the audience wants to applaud. The audience wants to shake hands. The audience wants to say, that meant something to me deeply, personally. And I believe that as someone who's putting stuff out on kind of a one-way street, that to be able to respond via Twitter, via Facebook, at conventions, doing podcasts, having conversation, people recognize me in the street, whatever, to be able to take it back, the thank you, the impact, you know? So
yeah,
I think it's important, and I'm always humbled because I am a fan. I'm a fan of so many things, and, like, I totally get that. Like, dude, like, I was in a voiceover workout group, and, like, some of the people who were in this group, like, I don't think Bill will mind that I mentioned, but, like, Bill Farmer, who plays Goofy, was part of our group.
Oh, shit.
And the first night, you know, I met Bill. Like, oh, it's just this nice, quiet, unassuming guy, and then someone pimps him into doing Goofy, and then you go, oh, my God. It's the guy who's been doing Goofy since 1985. This guy was Goofy in every single thing we've seen Goofy in.
Yeah.
And it's not even a matter of, like, I want to tell him how much Goofy has meant, but, like, he gets that. I'm sure he gets that all the time.
Yeah.
But it was still kind of like, you know.
You want to give appreciation. I mean, that's really it, is people always want to give their appreciation, and I like to, too. And that's why I like to usually get the appreciation stuff out during the beginning of the podcast of, like, here, I'm having a fan orgasm here of, like, oh, my God, this person's here, in a sense. And so, because, like you said, Roles can mean so much. It can be life-changing to people. Roles, books, anything. It can be life-changing and make people into who they are. I mean, like, Steven Spielberg was someone, too. And the fact is, too, that you're a fan, so you know. Because I talk to people who aren't fans, and they have no idea what some of this stuff means. But you are, so you do know. And you kind of like have an understanding of what it means to be in the trenches. And that is, I like to call it a gift.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah, thank you, man. I think it's important to have empathy for people.
Yes.
You know, and understand why, and you know, not just that they are a fan, but why.
Yeah.
You know, like what is it about? You know, for me, I had to come to grips with what is it about Batman? Why Batman for me more so than Superman? Mm-hmm. Why does that mean more to be a Gotham cop than a Metropolis cop?
Yeah, and
you know, and like being bullied as a kid, and it puts you into a darker place, and I think that's where that resonance was.
Mm.
I think it's because Batman is such a normal guy with a ton of money and a vendetta that like, it makes him a little bit cooler, certainly. But like, I don't know. I just whatever. Like, there's it's cool.
Yeah,
it's cool to be that. So,
it is. Speaking of Batman, when you were on the Gotham City, when you were doing your role in BVS, I know you probably didn't get any cool things from there, but I always like to ask this question from people who did roles and stuff. Did you take any, and no one will know, but did you take anything from the set, like any like little souvenirs? Because everyone takes something, and I was kind of curious. I hear some weird stories, so I was kind of curious, like, did you take any Gotham City stuff? I mean, and trust me, I don't think Zack Snyder's listening. If he does, love you. But yeah, like,
not a thing. One thing I wish I could have taken was the Batarang.
Oh my God, that would have been.
Dude, I took my memory from that. I took Larry Fong shot me in there. I took a conversation with Zack Snyder walking to Craft Service and back, talking about DC Universe. I took the memory of working with my favorite director.
Yeah.
I took the gift of walking through the city that I worked as a sketch comic and joined the Screen Actors Guild in.
I didn't put that one together. That is actually very true.
And turned that city into Gotham, and wearing, you know, a Gotham hat. I didn't even take a picture.
No, like, really?
No, there was so much. When I went to go to set, they were shooting at the old train station. You know, the big finale at the end of the picture takes place in the train station.
Yeah.
It's this big, beautiful. Michael Bay shoots there all the time. And I went down to that set to go pick up my sides for the next day because they would not send me script.
Oh, wow. Well, I mean, it makes sense.
That's how locked up it was.
Yeah. Wow.
So, like, when I – and remember – this movie came out, what, last year? Last spring?
Last
2016?
Something like that, yeah.
I shot in October 2014.
Holy hell.
I sat with it. So that movie was being edited, and my first day of work was before they had started principal photography, I want to say, in May.
Mm.
We were already doing Richie. I flew to Detroit, and we did, you know that picture that's on the front page of the Daily Bugle?
Yeah.
And Mason, and then now I'm blanking on a man's name, but the dude who played the guy that Batman branded.
Yeah.
That photograph taken by Clay Enos with the Gotham cop car, that was our first day at work. He was just taking stills, and he wanted to look like when Jack Ruby shot Lee Harvey Oswald.
Oh, wow.
So, like, we shot for maybe an hour. We got in the wardrobe and everything. Zach was there. Jason Momoa was there.
Ooh.
I didn't get to talk or nothing like that, but I just worked on another picture that he was doing work on. But mm-hmm. he came to meet Zach and to kind of walk around. And Patrick Tatopoulos, the designer, was there. And Zach was running around set throwing a football around this giant soundstage. And, I mean, it was amazing. And then I came back in October to shoot again, like 6 months later, to shoot the scenes. But when I got to set, I had to go the night before. I went down there. The sides were printed on red paper so that they couldn't be photographed or couldn't be photocopied. That's how much secrecy was there.
I've never heard of that either. That's damn.
So am I going to risk personal memorabilia and being potentially cut out of this film for the sake of having some knickknack, a badge that I didn't turn in? Hell no. I'm a team player.
That's
I want
true.
To keep the story quiet. I don't want people to start throwing shade on this movie based on some information I leaked a year and a half before the movie came out.
Yeah, because you'll never get anything
again.
Tell
the story and surprise. I mean, everyone was more surprised when they saw it. And that, to me, that's the thrill. So, like, and they sent me, like, a fantastic raincoat with a Batman versus Superman patch on it.
Oh,
as part
that's
of
cool.
Crew, and a Batman versus Superman crew t-shirt. And a couple of the greatest stories in my life.
Yeah, like...
I came out ahead. And residuals. I'm starting to see residuals from that. So that's the other part, is the movie pays in all kinds of different ways.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? As from what you said with everything, those are... And you think about it, those are actually kind of the best gifts that you could get. Yeah. It's not anything physical, but, like, the memories and the stories are always the best.
I'll tell you, I used to be all about, like, busting my phone out at, like, a concert or Disneyland or something like that, or some special memory.
Yeah.
But, man, I'm learning to keep my phone away because it's getting in the way of my enjoyment of the thing.
Yeah.
If I want a video of Sting and Peter Gabriel at the Hollywood Bowl, I can watch a video online. There's 50,000 of them from last year's concert. But I was there, and I remember it. My memory of it is way more valuable to me than some video that I would have shot.
Exactly.
The ability to play air guitar along to Sting versus standing there with my phone in the air blocking the view of people behind me. Yeah. I'd rather be able to play air guitar.
Yeah, that's it. 100% on that. And, you know, I can agree to that. Comic-Cons. You see a lot of people on the phones on Comic-Cons. And I take my fair share of pictures, but, like, I don't want to be on the phone 24/7 recording videos and everything like that, because enjoy the moments. And, like, you know, and people always like, here, let me record this. Let me take a selfie and everything like that when you're meeting cool people. Like, I met the guy who played Foggy Nelson at Comic-Con this year, and I met Michael Rosenbaum, and I wasn't even dare thinking of, no, let me just, I just want a photo with you, and that's it. I, like, talked to him, and, like, for a little bit and said, like, hi, what's up? And I mean, like, and Michael has been a big part of my life with his roles and who he is as a guy, too, and so I was like, thank you, wouldn't be where I'm at without you. And I didn't never even thought about taking the photo. And so...
Right.
That's and that's, you can clearly tell people sometimes get astounded by that too, of like, they're not wanting a photo. It's like, no, well, like, I'd rather have the words to conversate with you.
Totally. That's so much more, it's so much more interesting.
Yes.
And valuable, and, you know, and ultimately, like, if I run into someone at a restaurant, that's not where I want to meet Amy Poehler.
No,
I want to meet Amy on set. I want to work with it.
Yeah.
That's you know what I mean? So, like, my perspective on meeting folks, running into them out and about is very different. So,
Yeah.
Not necessarily very different, but it's like, it's just, I think we're on the same page. We're just saying the same thing.
It's true. Yeah, it is true. I mean, yeah, like, I'll agree to that one too. If I see, like, Samuel L. Jackson, I'm not going to be like, hey, man, I want a picture, or, like, handshaking that. I'm going to be a slight wave and a nod, and that's about it. And I'll be walking on the road.
Yeah. But awareness, exactly.
Like, it's not that, and to any listeners out there, let's kind of put that out there. To any listeners out there, these are people too, whether it be comic artists or writers or actors or anybody, they're people too. So if you see them at Walmart or something, just leave them the hell alone, please.
That's right. They're just shopping.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like I say, I'm also, I love when I get stopped or recognized by kids and that kind of stuff. So everybody, you know, if I'm in a hurry, I don't. I don't love it as much, but I'm always polite about it. I know that, you know, it's a rare occasion that when you run into people that you're like, oh my God, you're this thing. And that means a great deal to me. So I, like I said about the, you know, the conversation aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. Yeah. I'm still figuring it out.
Yeah. It's fine. I mean, the way you're going, I think you're going to have a little bit of time to figure it out, too, because I think we can still see you in some pretty kick-ass roles coming up still. I mean, you're doing phenomenal work, so.
Thanks. It's fun. I'm having a blast, and we'll see how things shape up. And now that the strike looks like that's going to go away, that's really comforting to know that, you know, we're not going on strike theatrically.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's... it's a big part of, I mean, it's what we do here. We make movies and TV shows, and the thought of going on strike was terrifying for everybody. We're prepared to, but it's also like, man, I hope we don't have to.
Yeah, it was it. Like, people are like, we'll do it, but we don't really want to. And if the strike did go through, and everyone was so relieved, and people were like saying, like, if the strike did go through, a lot of stuff would be in the air, and a lot of things would have been really down south. It would have been, and it's for a good cause, don't get me wrong, but it's still like, it's a very touchy thing, the strike, sometimes. It really is, because you don't want to seem like an asshole about it, and then you kind of, but then you also know, like, it's for good.
Right.
So, I mean, speaking of roles, though, I just got one final question for you, and for your future coming up. Can we see you in... Well, actually, two. Can we see you coming up in Justice League or maybe the Batman movie as a Gotham cop again? Or maybe a new cop or someone else entirely? Can you speak about that if you got any attachments to those movies?
I am... At this point, I'm not attached to anything.
Damn, okay.
So who knows?
Mm-hmm.
I'm very hopeful, but I can say that if Justice League's... principal photography is complete, I'm not a part of it.
Okay.
Well, there's you know, I mean, I didn't show up in Suicide Squad.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that Officer Mazzucchelli is necessarily a an integral part to the Gotham City Police Force.
You never know. He seemed like the cool guy.
I'm not at liberty to say if I've not, you know, at this point. But that said, My hope is that he has not retired from the force, that he is still actively trying to stop criminals in Gotham City.
Exactly.
And we will see if he is part of the story. If he is, I'm more than happy to reprise the role.
Yeah, I mean, maybe you could pull some strings, too, for the Batman movie. Because I think kind of what would be cool in seeing it all come full circle with that and him still working in the force is... You get a scene where you're with Commissioner Gordon. I mean, to me, that would be pretty kick-ass. That would be amazing. Be like, hey, Commish, we got this Joker in town now, or like something going on. And it's like, oh my God. I think that'd be pretty cool. I mean, like, maybe pull some strings for that if you can, like for the Batman movie since it's still going on. Because you played a Gotham cop. Why can't you come back?
That's right. I agree. We'll see what happens. That'll be up to the screenwriters and the casting directors, but hopefully, my fingers are crossed. We'll see.
Yeah. This is the last question now. You played a villain. You played Zaz. You played a good guy. And you've also played... You just played a little bit more villains than that, a little bit more. Can we see you as maybe a superhero anytime soon? In any... like, in DC, Marvel, or anything like that? Can we maybe... And, like, if not, if you can't say anything about it... Who would you like to play as if you got a chance to play a superhero since you've done supervillain?
That's a great question. I can tell you I'm not slated to play, to my knowledge, I'm not confirmed to play any heroes at this moment.
Mm-hmm.
But if I were to play someone, I would love to play Hal Jordan.
Oh.
I've always loved the Green Lanterns.
Yes.
And I think he's an interesting, tortured guy. I think there's a lot to that character, especially in the relaunch.
Mm-hmm.
I love what Ryan Reynolds did with him in the original Green Lantern movie.
Yeah.
But it was also young Hal Jordan, and I'm way more interested in darker.
Yeah, he's been at this.
It'd be fun to play.
Yeah, and that would be. I think they're kind of going for that too. Who knows with Green Lantern right now? I mean, would it be animated or live action though? Would that you?
I would. Well, I'm down for whatever. It depends on the shape I'm in.
Yeah.
Either way, I see it more likely that they would do an animated, like, you know, Blackest Night sort of a take on it, something like that. God. I think would be amazing. But we'll see what happens. DC is putting their eggs in the Justice League basket right now. So if Green Lantern becomes a part of that down the road, my secret hope is in 15 years, playing Green Arrow, when I'm older and can grow a mustache.
Holy shit, cast it.
And doing him on camera, that would be a blast. But we'll see what comes of it. I've got to build my career to a point where I'm thought of in that way. I'm still a recurring co-star, guest star type of actor, and Hollywood loves young. It's and so we'll figure that out. I gotta age to the right parts.
Hey, in the amount of years you've done so far, some good work. So like in 15, I could see it. I mean, like, you're gonna have some shoes to fill though with Stephen Amell right now, Green Arrow. I'm not gonna lie to you,
he's terrific. But listen, why aim low?
That's true.
I mean, I think he does great work, and I think it'd be a blast to do it in the feature world.
Yeah, that would be. Oh, come on. Now put it on a sticky note and put it in someone's office for like later on. Like they just discover it, like Jumanji. They discover it like in a dust pile. Like this is it. This is what's gonna make us more money. Get him now. Who knows? But. Yeah, and the world's ever changing these days. If it's any indication on anything, so
no doubt.
Yeah. Well, thank you, man, for coming on to the show. It's been a complete blast having you on here. To be honest with you,
Dakota, thank you for having me on, man. I appreciate it, and I appreciate your fans listening. And if people are interested in voiceover and getting into it, you know, I do my podcast is called All Over Voiceover. And I've had 45 episodes now, and talked to some of the greatest cartoon voices, and working actors, and commercial people, and casting directors and agents, and it's just really dedicated to getting information out there about how to do this work, and I hope your listeners will check it out.
Yeah, I mean, I'm probably gonna check it out too. I mean, what can you find it on? Like iTunes, website.
iTunes, Stitcher, iTunes? It's all over the place. Just look for All Over Voiceover.
Okay.
And it's voiceover is one word, but if you just search for All Over Voiceover, it'll show up. My first episode is with Brian T. Delaney, who played the player character from Fallout 4.
Oh, beautiful.
I mean, everyone from. I had one episode with Sissy Jones and Rich Sommer from Firewatch.
Ooh.
And they talked. It was the first interview they had done together, which was awesome. Mm. Deborah Wilson from Mad TV talking. I mean, so incredibly. Oh man, about working and doing Blizzard stuff for World of Warcraft, and Sobolov talking about Drax and about Gorilla Grodd for Flash. Mm. Fred Tatasciore was the Hulk. Rick Wasserman is the promo voice for AMC, talking about doing promo work.
Wait a minute, did he...
So many great folks.
Yeah, and speaking of that, condolences. I can't remember the man's name. The announcer for The Walking Dead has passed last night. I just found that one out a little bit ago, actually, too. So speaking of announcement, I just kind of want to put it out there, too. Condolences to the man.
Yeah, the announcer from The Walking Dead.
Yeah, the guy who's like previously in The Walking Dead and stuff like that. That's what I was just told. I kind of want to give him a little bit of a shout-out because... Yeah, but sweet. I'll tell you this: you have a new listener already. So
I'm thrilled to hear that, man. Thank you so much. And,
no problem.
I'm so happy to that you invited me to come on the show. That's just it's really great, man.
Yeah, and thank you for coming on. Is there any other kind of shout outs you want to do? I mean, where can people find you on social media too? Just to, like, follow your work.
You can find me on Twitter. At KiffVH, KiffVH. I'm also on Twitter on All Over VO, is the show's Twitter site. And then I'm on Musical.ly. I just do stupid videos on Musical.ly at Kiff Vandenhuvel, and then on Instagram at KiffVH. And I've got reels and stupid crap on my website, which also has links to every one of my shows for All Over Voiceover and my demo reel, and that's at alovervo.com.
Sweet. Yeah, and if people who have listened to this show and have listened so far and have listened basically to this interview, and basically if you don't listen to his work, come on now. Come on. Really. It's not me just being like, listen to this man's stuff. It's like being honest here. I mean, come on, you know the guy. Come on. So, thank you, man, for coming on again. Yeah, it's been an honor. It's been
an honor being on the show. Thanks so much for your time, and have a great one.
You too. And you're invited back on anytime. If you want to get a new role and want to talk about anything, you're invited back on, sir.
Sweet. I appreciate that, man. Thanks a bunch. I'll take you up.
No problem. Talk to you later, man. That was Kiff, ladies and gentlemen. So, thank you for joining me on this new episode of Comic Chronicle. And as always, you can find us on social media at RealFanCorp on Twitter and at DakotaMorgan3. If you want to follow my personal one, you can send us messages, tweets, whatever you like on there. And then FilmWorld97 is going to be our little Instagram page on there. And then like us on Facebook too. And give your hate mail and whatever you want to, or if you want to give good mail, I'll listen to it. So thank you guys for joining me. Make sure you follow and like all those pages too. And make sure you also subscribe to the show to stay in touch with the show, basically. And stay in touch and what's going on in the world of Comic Chronicle. And yeah. And also, if you guys want to check out, well, if you were interested in the film and cinema world, basically, check out Film World. It's one word. It is on iTunes and filmworld.podbean.com. Check it out there, because dive in and talk to many great actors and more. So thank you guys for joining me on here. Subscribe on to stay in touch with Comic Chronicle and Film World if you enjoyed, and all the social media pages. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, and stay classy, Gotham City.